Some Things Shouldn't Be a Chore by Sci-Fi Girl 47, read by Hana Nobira. Chapter 4. You know, there should be a goddamn handbook for idiots who decide that they're going to run experiments on themselves. Really, I am sick of this. Scientists of the world, cut this shit out. I cannot believe I'm saying this, that these words are coming out of my mouth, but peer review. Use it. Know it. Love it. It might just keep you from ending up as a sentient bundle of energy with a bad attitude that no one, and I do mean no one, is going to invite to their birthday party. A car went spinning through the air, straight for Tony's armored head, and he raised one hand, knocking it back down without even pausing in his rantings. The thing crashed to the ground under him, and he shot up to make a more tempting target. At least while the damn thing was tossing cars at him, it wasn't trying to slice up school buses full of kids anymore. There needs to be a basic course at all university-level science majors that includes basic advice like, "So they all said you were mad. Turning yourself into a monster will just prove them right. So go get a beer and calm the fuck down." And, "It's really hard to get grants when you're eating your lab assistants or cackling maniacally. Maybe you should just focus on a different discipline now." Does the phrase radio silence mean anything at all to you, Iron Man? Coulson asked, sounding a little strained. "I'll get Hawkeye to explain it to me later," Tony said. "Hey, I've been the soul of discretion," Clint said. "For once," Tony agreed. He swooped down, cutting dangerously close to the swirling mass of air, debris, and energy, and it lashed out, the wave of force clipping his leg and sending him spiraling off course. The HUD blared 1,000 different warnings all at once, and Tony righted himself without even a spike in his pulse. This was getting boring. What is there to do other than make fun of the situation? Because he was stupid enough to keep trying something that clearly was not going to work, he aimed a repulsor blast at the thing's face. The energy ripped through it, and it neither paused nor gave any indication that it had felt the blow. Switching to his internal channel, he spoke to Jarvis. "Any luck with reconfiguring the energy signature of the repulsors so we might actually, I don't know, make contact with this thing?"
"I am sorry, sir, but we have not managed to gather any data that would be helpful to us in this matter."
Jarvis sounded as put out as Tony felt.
"The energy signature is almost non-existent. It is rather like there is nothing holding it together other than wind and debris."
"Thanks, Jarvis. Keep it up. Let me know if you figure anything out." He switched back to the main team channel, and Steve was doing his best to keep everyone together. "Hawkeye, keep the Hulk back if you can. There's nothing he can do here, and he's getting frustrated." "Gotcha, Cap. We're building a barrier between your current position and the next unevacuated street. Might not stop this thing, but we can at least provide some protection from flying debris." And it went unspoken that he was providing Hulk with something productive to do before the big green guy got frustrated with his lack of effectiveness and started taking it out on nearby buildings. He'd never say it, but Tony was perpetually impressed by the way that Barton just dealt with Hulk. He wasn't sure if Hawkeye was suicidal or just too crazy to care about death, but the first time he'd stood in front of the big guy with a raised eyebrow and folded arms, it had been a heart stopper. Hulk, however, seemed to be equal parts amused by and adoring of the archer. So, boom, team synergy. What do you know? Coulson had been so coldly, quietly furious in wake of that successful mission that no one had been surprised that he'd ordered Clint into his office, and neither of them had come out for more than an hour. Steve had been worried, hovering and pacing and doing that thing where he chewed on his lower lip. But Natasha had just smiled and said they'd work it out. They always did. "Keep it up," Steve said. We'll let you know if there's a change in position. I think we'll hear you coming. That thing isn't subtle. There was a note of frustration in Clint's voice, too. He'd run through every arrow that S.H.I.E.L.D. had given him, and more than a few that Tony had slipped him on the sly. But not a single one of them had made a damn bit of difference. Thor was in the same boat as the rest of them, but he was still throwing bolts of lightning, just out of boredom or frustration or because he was a really optimistic guy, Tony wasn't quite sure. Maybe a little of each of them? It annoyed the hell out of Thor when he couldn't punch something. He took that as a personal affront. Bad things were meant to go squish on the blunt force of Thor's fist. Tony pushed the suit up to Thor's level, and they exchanged a, "Frickin' mad scientists, what are you gonna do, really?" look. It was a look that the team exchanged a lot. Seriously, Tony was going to start tracing these idiots back to their institutions of higher learning and sending the damn places bills. This was ridiculous. "We're looking at containment options," Coulson was saying through the comms, and Tony was sure that S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing just that. But even the R&D department at S.H.I.E.L.D. wasn't so hyped up on peyote to have made the plan for a giant dust bunny stomping around the city. Who would be stupid enough to make a plan for... Tony froze. "Hey, Cap." "Go ahead, Iron Man." "So this thing's a ball of sentient wind and swirling dust and spoken word manifesto, right? We haven't managed to locate any sort of central mass?"
"Not as of yet. There must be one."
"There might not be," Tony pointed out. "He may have fried himself to the point that his consciousness may be the only thing holding that mess together, and it is getting perilously close to occupied areas of the city." He left unspoken the obvious fact that while they couldn't hit this thing could hit them. Natasha had tested that theory for them, and it ended up with a dislocated shoulder and a head injury when it had backhanded her into a wall. "It can take out buildings and throw cars, and we have to stop it now," Tony continued, and he knew that he had everyone's attention. "I can stop it." "This is going to end badly," Clint said. "Shut it, Hawkeye." "What have you got, Iron Man?" Coulson said, and Tony grinned, an unholy, unapologetic, "Suck it, mad scientists. I'm madder and more scientific than you," grin.
"Please, sir, no,"
Jarvis said, and Tony shrugged. "I've got an army of sentient, self-replicating Roombas." So that happened. Everyone looked at Tony with expressions that ranged from horrified to shell-shocked. He gave a weak smile and a half-hearted shrug. "Look, it worked." A bottle of tequila was slammed down in the middle of the table, and everyone jumped. Clint dropped a stack of paper cups from the water cooler next to it and started opening the bottle with a practiced hand. "Clint," Steve said, his voice full of warning. "We're at S.H.I.E.L.D. We haven't even started the debrief. You really think we should be drinking?" Clint gave him an incredulous look. "Cap, were you just on the same mission as me? Because let me tell you, yes, I really, really think we should be drinking. We just watched a gigantic dust bunny of rage and poor self-esteem issues get eaten by an army of robotic vacuum cleaners. It was like a fucking zombie movie without the teeth." "But with even more screaming," Bruce said. And to everyone's shock, he snagged a paper cup and held it out. "Oh, God, the screaming." Clint dumped a measure of the tequila into the cup. "Yeah, I'm trying to forget that, thanks." "There's no way I could have anticipated that," Tony pointed out. "And he might still be alive." Everyone gave him a pitying glance, and Clint handed out significant shots of liquor to everyone. He skipped the cup and held up the bottle. "To the internet," he said, as everyone held up their Dixie cups, "which will ensure that the shaky cell phone footage of just what can happen when you fuck with the Avengers will live forever, and hopefully dissuade a couple of heartsick graduate students from pressing that big red button of doom." Natasha said something in Russian, and everyone threw back their shots except for Steve. Tony waited for the sensation of having just downed a cup of pure liquid hate to subside, and then he pointed at the cup. "Drink," he said, his voice raw and raspy, "or I'll do it for you." Steve held the cup over his head, out of Tony's reach. "I can't get drunk, and I don't like this stuff," he said. So Coulson took it out of his hand as he walked into the room. "Ah, Coulson, sorry, we were just..." He stopped as Coulson tossed back the shot with a professional aplomb. "Okay, then." Coulson slapped the cup down on the table. "Stark, when this debrief is done, I will be having a long, long chat with you about the thin, microscopically thin line between hero and power-crazed supervillain playing with things not to know." "I think that's actually a major at MIT, Bruce said, slumped over on the table, head buried in his arms. "Or at least a thesis committee." "Wow, that sounded like the opposite of fun." Tony pulled out his Stark phone. "Sorry, booked. I can work you in next Tuesday." He blinked as Coulson took the phone from his hand and gave it a toss. "That was a prototype." "I, unsurprisingly enough, do not care." Tony sighed. "Look," he said, his tone taking on a coaxing note. "I could not possibly have anticipated that. And it worked, didn't it? You certainly didn't have any better ideas. What were we going to do, let Thor wave his cape at it?" Thor had taken the bottle from Clint, who now looked a lot more relaxed and was giggling under his breath. "Roomba," he said to Thor, who grinned and toasted him with a bottle before downing about a fifth of it in one pull. "Do you know what the difference between a villain and a supervillain is, Stark?" Coulson said, leaning his palms on the tabletop, looming over everything like a very snappily dressed gargoyle. "Style?" Tony asked, pointing both index fingers in Coulson's direction, like the gunslinger he was. He added a wide grin to the gesture, but Coulson didn't seem to notice. "A villain has a giant mass of robotic vacuum cleaners that he can stick on his enemies. A supervillain gives them the ability to fly." "In my defense, I do not actually remember installing repulsor technology in the Roombas," Tony said, choosing his words carefully. "It had been a working theory, sure, but he still wasn't quite sure when he'd implemented it. Maybe sometime on Tuesday night?" That one was a blur. "It was a very long couple of days, so I was as surprised by that as everyone else. Screaming, 'Fuck yes, suck it!' over the shield comm line made that abundantly clear," Natasha said, her voice droll. "That was an appropriate vacuum-related pun," Tony pointed out. "Yeah, real masterpiece theater-level dialogue there," Clint said, grinning at Tony, "because honestly, everyone knew that if the two of them decided to team up, the rest of the team was going down. That was not even in question. Normal boys would take their superpowered comrades to town." "Shut up, Barton," Tony said, grinning back. "I seem to remember you shrieking like a toddler somewhere in there." "One of them attacked my head." "Clear indication you need to shower more often." Tony crossed his arms over his chest. "It wasn't that bad." Three experienced SHIELD field agents threw up, and four others were crying. Not just a little bit of watering eyes, Stark. Full on sobbing. "I had to deal with sobbing agents," Coulson said, his voice full of, "I am really not happy about this." "People who have been to war zones. People who have seen horrific, horrific acts of violence. All it took to break them was the robotic equivalent of a locust swarm consuming everything in its path." "The screaming was really..." Bruce shuddered. "The screaming was something." "I wouldn't know. I turned off my auditory input," Tony said. "Look, he could still be alive, right?" "R&D is pretty sure he is, actually." No fucking way, Tony said before he could stop himself. And Thor was grinning at him, and Clint was laughing out loud, and Steve had his face buried in his hands. So, that being said, what's the problem? Getting him back out of 100 robotic vacuum cleaners, Coulson said. That and the screaming. It wasn't that. Howls of the damned, Stark, Barton said. Like, seriously, howls of the damned. He shouldn't have turned himself into a dust devil, Tony said. Speaking of the howls of the damned, Coulson said to Clint, is that Fury's tequila? Not anymore, Clint grinned as Coulson gave him a smack on the back of the head. How come Clint's the only one who gets hit? Tony asked Coulson. He likes me best, Clint said. Because if I start hitting you, I'm not going to stop until someone tasers me into unconsciousness, Coulson said with a faint smile. You do realize we won, right? Tell that to the Psychoval team. They're booked through October at this point. The Avengers were a smart group of individuals, trained in battle tactics and psychological warfare, and capable of bringing down entire armies with half the team out on medical leave. Which meant that it had taken them about a week to devise a Tony trap that worked every time. Tony knew they were doing it, knew it the same way that a mouse knew that the peanut butter that happened to be inside the little plastic box was probably not there as a late Christmas present. But he still fell for it, because it was a very clever trap, combining almost all of his favorite things. And he kinda liked the fact that they went through the effort. Also, he was afraid that if he really resisted, Steve was just going to send Barton with one of his trank arrows. Clint would do it, too. The man delighted in hiding in ceilings and wriggling through air vents and would no doubt jump at the chance to shoot Tony in the ass with something, anything, that would not end up with Coulson yelling at him. So he continued to give in to the Tony trap of perfectly brewed Kona coffee, bacon and fresh biscuits, a loud discussion of the newest tech toys that were intrinsically inferior to whatever Stark Industries was making, and a household appliance that mysteriously needed fixing. Steve was usually dispatched to remind him about eating, and the rest fell into place in due order. The toaster was not happy that no one was paying attention to it, so Tony gave it a minor upgrade between bites of fruit salad, because someone, probably Coulson, was actually paying attention to the nutritional guidelines that SHIELD Medical had sent over. SHIELD was pretty sure they were all going to die of rickets or scurvy before Dr. Doom or Magneto or Loki had a chance to finish them off. And so, yeah, fruit. Tony was pretty sure that SHIELD Medical was grasping at straws, but when one's patients were regularly turned into farm animals or sentient paper dolls, focusing on the little stuff must be a godsend. There was some argument happening in the background about the chore chart, about how nobody other than Steve was fulfilling their daily duties, mostly because Clint liked to bitch at Thor, and Thor took offense at any suggestion that he was letting the team down. Shut it, Clint, Natasha said, sipping her tea. Besides, Steve missed Stark-hugging duty on Sunday. Stark was in Tokyo on Sunday, Bruce said. And not even this group will authorize the use of the Quinjet to fly to Japan to hug Tony. Tony gritted his teeth and reached for his tablet. Besides, he said, trying to make a joke out of it, the Japanese Prime Minister would likely have been a little uncomfortable with that. He called up the toaster's schematic and considered a heavier heating coil. A job is a job, Clint pointed out with a smirk. Steve, you are a failure as a leader. You have failed at your appointed task. Thanks, Hawkeye. I'll be sure to write myself up for that during the next quarterly review, Steve said, shaking his head. There was a faint smile on his face. So good of you to remind me about my responsibilities. I, Clint said, spearing a sequence of fruit cubes on a skewer, am a giver. And a job is a job. We've all got to do the rough stuff from time to time. Go hug Stark and mark it off the chart. Tony waved a fork in their general direction. You may all go to hell. Don't make me get the chart, Clint told him. You cannot interfere with the chart. Tony kept his head down. Yeah, because if there was one thing his completely fucked up childhood had prepared him for, it was the concept that affection, especially physical affection, was an unpleasant chore that needed to be scheduled, at least where Tony was concerned. The room was suddenly so still that Tony could hear himself breathing. He glanced up from his tablet, and everyone was staring at him. Everyone was just looking right at him, with wide eyes and still faces, and something he couldn't quite figure out. Until he met Steve's eyes. Steve's agonized face. Really, the man looked like he'd been punched in the stomach, like he was going to cry. He'd been to war, he'd fought Nazis, and right now, in the Avengers kitchen, Steve Rogers looked like he was going to cry. And that was when Tony realized he'd said that aloud. He'd said that humiliating, self-pitying, Jesus, I am the most fucked up person alive sentence, out loud. And they had all heard him, all of them. But it was Steve who was staring at him, with wounded eyes that Tony did not understand. He never understood Steve. All he'd really wanted out of life was to not completely humiliate himself in front of Steve, and he'd failed at that too. His brain was doing something, like he was rebooting himself in safe mode. Limited access, no complicated settings, nothing to think about or do or process, just a simple set of instructions. Get up. Collect the coffee cup. Collect the tablet, and leave the room. And there was someone talking, someone saying Tony's name, and that was not data that was being accepted at this time. He didn't have the ability to handle auditory input right now. So he shrugged off the hand that tried to grab his arm, with a bit more force than was necessary. Linear progression. Up. Turn. Leave. Hallway. Stairs. Workshop. Door lock. Talk to Jarvis, even if he didn't hear what Jarvis said back. Only the slightly higher-pitched tone that indicated that his AI was aware that something was wrong. Was very wrong. But Tony couldn't handle dealing with that right now. He just gave instructions by rote and retreated. He wasn't sure what happened after that. Maybe a complete mental defrag, or maybe just a small nervous breakdown. He really didn't know. When he became aware of his surroundings again, he was seated on the floor, back pressed up against the concrete wall, with Dummy's head resting on his folded legs. He got the impression that he'd been scratching the bot behind a particularly sensitive joint, and Dummy let out a whir and chirp, stretching up as Tony stilled. His tablet was in his other hand, and man, he'd been busy. Great. Blackout engineering. That always ended well. Well, to be honest, it usually ended in patents and a significant stock price jump. But that didn't mean Tony enjoyed it. Okay, fine. He enjoyed it. It was kind of fun to reverse engineer his own stuff and figure out what the hell he'd been thinking. His coffee was mostly gone and stone cold. He was a little afraid to check the time, but he was still alone in his workshop, and he must have cranked the music at some point, because AC/DC had formed a nice comforting cocoon of wailing guitars to hide in. He sighed, head falling back against the wall, and wondered if he could just stay down here forever.
Sir?
Jarvis's voice was gentle, coaxing. Yeah, I'm here. I'm with you. Sorry, Jarvis. Tony's fingers stroked down Dummy's arm, taking comfort in the familiar lines of the metal structure. He needed to consider replacing some of the joint structures. The material would be falling prey to fatigue cracks soon enough. Dummy bumped his head against Tony's palm, happy for the attention.
Captain Rogers is outside, and he is quite upset. I've managed to block his attempts to enter the workshop up until this point, but he is refusing to. Sir, if you go catatonic again, I will instruct Dummy to get the fire extinguisher.
Jarvis snapped, as Tony sank down into his hunched shoulders. I'm not going to go catatonic, Tony snapped back. He also didn't stand up. How pissed off is he? He asked.
He attempted to use Colonel Fury's access codes,
Jarvis said.
So I would say, extremely. I don't suppose I could convince you to allow him to enter.
Don't you dare! Tony could feel the humiliation rising in the back of his throat, just like bile. He swallowed, ignoring the too tight feeling of his chest. Just don't. I need to do something first. I can't talk to him just yet. I have things that I have to do. There was a long pause.
I understand,
Jarvis said at last.
I will do my best, sir. But short of sending an electronic short through the keypad...
No, no, do not hurt him! Tony gave Dummy one final pat and pushed himself off of the floor. His legs were numb, so that was fun. That was not what he had intended. He stumbled just a little, shoulders hitting the wall, and all the way across the workshop, he knew Steve had spotted him through the glass walls, because the other man went still. Tony kept his head down, pretending that he didn't see anything, shoulders forward, eyes fixed on his tablet as he wandered to the nearest work table and sat down, straddling the bench so his back was still to the entrance. He wanted to look, and yeah, that was a bad idea. He didn't know if he could continue to maintain a mask at this point. Stupid defective brain. But he really wanted to look, to see if Steve's mouth was still moving, still talking, even if he couldn't hear the words. He kind of wanted to know what Steve was saying.
He has been repeating, "Thank God," or words to that effect since you stood up,
Jarvis said, and Tony cursed, loud and long and full of self-hatred.
It would appear that he did not believe my assurances that you were unharmed.
Yeah, well, I keep talking when I don't intend to talk, so yeah, I am pretty damn broken, but that probably falls under the category of unharmed. Tony slapped the tablet down on the bench, staring down at it. Someday he'd figure out a way to do a diagnostic on his own brain, or at least take an ice cream scoop to the messed up emotional parts. Shoulders slumping, he went back to his work. Work was good, calming, easy. Work didn't make him panic or confuse him or humiliate him. His workshop was safe.
Sir!
That was the only warning he got before there was a loud sound of glass shuttering, cracking, shattering. He jerked his head over his shoulder, reaching for something, anything off the table to use as a weapon, heart staggering in his chest as the adrenaline spiked. And Steve swung his shield onto his shoulder and stepped through the smashed panel. Tony stared at him, mouth gaping open. Did you just go upstairs, get your shield, and smash your way through the goddamn wall? He asked, incredulous. Steve glanced over his shoulder at the mess. Yes, it appears that's just what I did. That's what I should have done an hour ago, he snarled, his feet heavy on the concrete floor. Jarvis, lower the volume on the music, please. Jarvis, don't you... Tony sighed as the music died. Great. Wonderful. Traitor. Don't pick on him, Steve snapped. He's been protecting you this whole time. But he, at least, knows when he's beaten. Traitor, Tony mumbled, bending his head, his shoulders, his whole body down around the tablet, folding himself in around it, knowing it was pathetic, but beyond caring. He heard Steve pause next to him, but didn't look up, didn't move, fingers dancing over the tablet screen. He heard Steve sigh, and then the shield was placed on the work table, and Tony felt Steve take a seat behind him. It took him a moment to realize that Steve was straddling the bench, facing away from Tony, his spine flush up against Tony's bent back. For a long moment, the two of them just sat there, back to back, facing in different directions, still and quiet. You aren't an obligation, Steve said, and Tony twitched, caught between fight and flight. No, don't you dare run away from me right now. Tony felt Steve take a deep breath, his back pressing against Tony's. I messed this up. You're not an obligation. You're not a chore, Tony.
Yeah, we both know that's not true, Tony muttered under his breath.
Stop it, Steve said. And he sounded so sad, his voice so leaden, that Tony felt guilty.
I screwed up. I understand that. I just...
He paused, his breathing a little faster than it should have been.
You've got two settings, Tony. Two faces. I kind of hate your public face.
Tony flinched, his whole body jerking at the impact of the words, and Steve muttered something that sounded like a curse.
No, no, I hate it because you put it on, Tony. Because you have to do that. That you can't just be, well, you.
Like being me had ever worked out well.
Steve stilled.
You said that aloud, he said at last.
Tony chuckled.
Yeah, I know.
Oh. Oh, good. Steve took a deep breath, and another.
I never say the right things to you. Never know how...
His voice broke.
I know you put up with a lot from us. That we're annoying and frustrating, and I interfere all the time. I know you hate it when I'm mucking around down here. I know that you don't want me here. I try, I really do, and all I manage is just to be this annoyance. And that's not what I want, but...
I want you here, Tony said, but he didn't think that Steve heard him.
You're always on the outside, and I hate it, and I don't know how to fix it. Because sometimes you're just there with that fake little half-smile on your face, like you don't know what you're doing here, in with everyone else. And it's your public smile, and I hate it. The words were loud in the small space, Steve's back, hard as a rock, behind him. Tony drew a rough fingertip over the surface of the tablet. This is your home, and we're the interlopers, and you should not look like that here. And I want to talk to you or tell you things or make you understand, and I can't. Because I'm not good at this, so I end up hovering and whining and poking and prodding, and I don't know why you put up with me.
Because you're my friend, Tony said, his voice soft. And it's not putting up with you, Steve. I like you.
He cast about, helpless, trying to find a way to explain, and failed miserably at it.
You're my friend. I don't have a lot of those.
Steve sucked in a breath. A friend should be a help, not a hindrance. You've done nothing but, well, you're... He stopped again.
Okay, I just... Look. The Avengers were a team. You made us something more. We were all lost, Steve said. And his voice was soft. Almost small, and not even sure what to do about it.
Tony pressed against Steve's broad back. The other man was slumped forward. And without thinking about it, Tony leaned back, unfolding himself so his spine followed the curve of Steve's, his head thrown back to rest on Steve's shoulder, as close as he could get them, though the contact was still too little, too late.
We were lost, Steve repeated, and the words vibrated through Tony's body, and he closed his eyes. And alone. The team was good. The team was excellent. But we'd leave at the end of the day, and go to lick our wounds, and stare at the blank ceiling, and feel the walls closing in on us. A laugh, a raw little one. And Steve shifted, and his voice was muffled now, like he'd put his hand over his face.
Or maybe that was just me. I just built and rebuilt and rebuilt the armor, Tony said, sighing. Like that changed anything.
Steve took a deep breath.
I was lost, he said, and the words took effort.
Alone.
And you gave me a home, a place to be, where people smiled at me and talked to me and yelled at me and treated me like a person, not a freak, not an asset or a commodity or a figurehead, not a symbol, just, you know, me. Confused and useless and so unbelievably stupid sometimes. "Stop it," Tony said, because he hated hearing Steve say those things about himself. "You're not." "Yeah, I am. Was. It's fine, really. But I came here. You let me come here. You invited me here. And for the first time in a long time, I had a home." He paused. "You'll never, ever know how much that meant to me. How much it still means to me. That I can screw up in the field, or do something wrong, or fail, or stumble over using the dang microwave, and I'm still welcome here. I can still come here." His voice shook, just a little, and then stabilized. "Come home." "Did you blow up the microwave again?" Tony asked, lips quirking up. "It was Thor. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it." He shifted, and his muscles flexed against Tony's back. "So when you said family meeting, even though I knew you didn't really mean it, that's all I could think about. That yes, this is my family, and that's something I haven't had in so long. I've been so honored to know you, all of you." He gave a small laugh, almost under his breath. "And we are all so messed up." Tony nodded. "We should get a group discount on therapy. There's a Groupon that is severely underrepresented in modern society. I'll pretend that means something to me." Steve was laughing anyway. "So when Clint put that on the board, I just..." He cleared his throat. "It was an excuse for doing something I wanted to do, but didn't think you'd let me because, He shrugged, his shoulders flexing beneath Tony's head. "I like hugging you." Tony felt his face heat. "Not like that," he told his stupid, stupid brain. "Not like that. He just meant hugging the way that friends did. He did not mean it like that. Stop being creepy and weird and stalkery with your best friend and teammate. It is unacceptable behavior. Goddamn stupid brain, making everything about sex. And if he was saying any of this out loud, he would cut out his own tongue." He paused. "Nope. Nothing." "Good. Interior monologue was staying where it belonged for once." "Out loud and carefully," he said. "Okay. That's okay. I can do that." "I don't want to be an obligation either, Tony." "You don't have to," Steve said, and something in Tony broke. Without thinking about it, he twisted around, swinging himself over the bench until he could wrap his arms around Steve from behind. His arms slipped under Steve's, around his waist, Tony's chest leaning against Steve's back. "Yeah," he whispered as Steve froze. "I do." There was a long, still moment where they just breathed, and then Steve's hand came up to cover Tony's, fingers warm and grip solid. "Thank you," he whispered. And there was such honest gratitude in the words that Tony wanted to cry. They stayed there, like that, for a long time, taking comfort from the contact and each other's presence. Tony took a deep breath. "Steve?" "Yeah?" "I'm keeping the Roombas." That startled a laugh out of him, loud and warm and real, and Tony relaxed just a little. "No, you're not," Steve said, looking back over his shoulder at Tony. He grinned, and Tony grinned back. "You are absolutely not." "What? You're going to throw them out into the cold, unfeeling world? Where they will be sad and alone and cut off from their loving Roomba friends and family? From Clint, who loves them all so deeply that I know he has named every single one of the murderous little bastards. I could never have guessed that you'd be so heartless, Stephen Rogers. Get the toaster to stop lighting things on fire. Then I'll discuss the Roomba babies. The what now? Tony released him, swinging around in front of Steve, who was flushed and embarrassed looking. The Roomba what? That's what Clint is calling them. It's not my... Steve groaned as Tony grinned at him, wide and bright and utterly unrepentant. Oh, no. No, we do not need 87 Roombas in the tower. My tower, my Roombas, Tony sing-songed, gripping Steve by the shoulders. I'm sorry, Cap. This is not a democracy. This tower is a starkocracy, and what I say goes. He did his best to look stern. Steve raised an eyebrow at him, and he sighed. Why do you get to be right all of the time? It's less fun than you might think. I never get invited to the good parties, Steve said with a straight face. Tony? Yeah? I never once hugged you because of the chart. How about the day I ended up covered in transmission fluid and fire extinguisher foam? Not even that day. As if by unspoken accord, they gathered themselves and started back upstairs. Steve glanced at them as they headed up the stairs, side by side, Steve carrying his shield and Tony carrying his tablet. How did that happen? Dummy, Calcifer, and Clint, Tony said, as if that explained everything. And judging by Steve's smile, maybe it did. Ah, is that why there was an official written warning stuck to the front of our toaster this morning? Paperwork must have finally gone through, yep. The most impressive thing is that Coulson got Fury to sign off on a disciplinary form for a toaster. I'm trying to imagine that conversation. I cannot manage it, Tony considered. Maybe you just put it in a pile of forms and let Fury sign them all. Tony? Yeah? Steve paused, gave him a look. I think that Coulson put the dang form down in front of Director Fury and said the toaster was way out of line. And at that point, not signing it would involve a discussion. Signing it means that Fury can go back to pretending we're not all crazy. He does pop antacids like they're chiclets, Tony said, grinning. Actually, Coulson said from the top of the stairs, making them both jump. Director Fury was the one who initiated the disciplinary action. He paused, letting that sink in. And Stark? Yes, Tony said, one foot hovering, ready to make a break down the stairs. Not that the workshop was secure anymore, because it was missing a goddamn wall. Thanks a lot, Captain America. Actually, now that he thought about that, that was kind of hot. And was Coulson still talking? Your Roombas got out of the R&D department and are currently attempting to storm the upper management offices. Tony considered that. Point the first, I love my Roombas. Point the second, screaming? He asked Coulson. So much screaming. Tony looked at Steve, who was shaking his head. The Simplin time. Grinning, he took the rest of the stairs at a run. Jarvis, prep the armor and release the hounds. The end. Reader's notes. First of all, I'd like to thank Sci-Fi Girl 47 for allowing me to podfic this story, because I love every single word of it. The humor, the witty banter, and most of all, that last scene, which is so tender and warm and full of promise and found family feels. All the found family feels. I love them. Each of the characters is hysterical in their own way. Thor with his ridiculous booming voice, and Clint talking smack, and Natasha being droll, and the original characters, Calcifer the Toaster and the Roomba Babies. I love them so much. This story has already been podficked once by the amazing Darling Sweet. So go listen to her version too. It's great. And she says she's going to finish the series, and I hope she does one day, but I'm definitely going to finish the series. As I'm saying this, there's a second and third part that are finished, and a fourth that is a work in progress, so I'm going to be at this for a while. I hope you stick around with me. The second story in the series is entitled Ordinary Workplace Hazards, or S.H.I.E.L.D. and OSHA Aren't on Speaking Terms. And it revolves a bit more around Clint and Coulson's relationship, because it's the Avengers, they just end up in ridiculous situations and kick a lot of ridiculous supervillain butt, and along the way there's threats of dismemberment and lots of slaps upside the head, because that's what Coulson and Clint consider foreplay. The third story in the series is 4 or 5 Reasons for Kidnapping Tony Stark, and I think it's my favorite. Tony's having a really bad week because he gets kidnapped, and then he manages to come up with this brilliant plan to MacGyver himself up to safety, and then he gets kidnapped again. And every way he comes up with this great idea and manages to save himself, and then he gets kidnapped again. So things are just not working out well for him. I'm open to suggestions for what to use as the musical theme for those two stories, because the third one, 4 or 5 Reasons for Kidnapping Tony Stark, they do actually mention the song All the Single Ladies. So, I mean, I guess I could use that one. It would be ridiculous. But then if I were going to go out all the way and be totally ridiculous, I would just use Britney Spears' I'm a Slave for You. Because you just know it's about kidnapping. Of course Tony would sing that to Steve. Of course. But, well, I hate that song, but it's so ridiculous, and it's a terrible, horrible song. So I'm probably going to stick with something sane because, you know, sanity. Something like Sinatra's Love is a Tender Trap because, you know, he gets trapped and he's in love. The second story, Ordinary Workplace Hazards, if I were going to go with the totally ludicrous option here, I might have to go with A Whole New World from Aladdin because, you know, they travel to an alternate reality, okay? It's a whole new world. You know, this amuses me, okay? But that probably needs some work. So, any ideas? For this podfic, Something Shouldn't Be a Chore, I chose Ought to Be by Audrey Assad because I really feel that it accurately captures the message of the story. Just listen to the lyrics from the chorus. And it may not be clear as the morning yet, and it may not be wide as a restless sea, but love, given freely, becomes what it ought to be. So it's about how love is not an obligation or a chore, but a gift. And at this point in the story, things between Steve and Tony are so awkward and uncertain, but the lyrics hint that throughout the series, slowly and surely, they're going to develop a much stronger bond. Because they've chosen to love each other freely, things will work out the way they ought to be. So that's about it. If you enjoyed the podfic, please leave feedback for Sci-Fi Girl 47. The link to her original story is in the podfic post, or you could just search for the title on AO3. And I would love it if you dropped me a line to let me know what you think. Thanks for listening. Bye.
is wide open spaces where I can run, and yet we're tangled up roots in the warm broken earth. Yeah, our love is sure, and it may not be clear as the morning yet, it may not be white as the restless sea, but love given free comes what it ought to be. It may not be clear as the morning, the restless sea, and it may not be red as the roses get, it may not be strong as the old oak trees, but love planted deeply becomes what it